My Career, Part 3. I learned a lot working in the projects division of SPL because every project is a risk. I had to spend a great deal of my time firefighting, sorting out problems with customers, managing expectations and the like. It was an interesting and challenging time. Mike and I became very close friends. We would share ideas and debate issues. He was a salesman. Slick, smooth, and operating best when winging it. He would make the promises to customers and staff, and I would make sure that the promises were delivered on. For a long time, another company had tried to headhunt him. Computer Configurations was a real upstart. They were a hardware company, but they wanted to expand into the software and services domains, and they needed someone to make it happen for them. Their chairman was a real maverick, but he was passionate and successful. Mike had brushed him off a long time ago. He never said anything about this to me, but I knew him well enough to know something was up. He eventually succumbed to an offer he could not refuse. He walked into my office late one afternoon in February 1998 and sat down. His first words were, "There's something I want to talk to you about." Before he could say another word, I asked, "Which company are you going to?" In a way, he was surprised, but by then, we could second-guess each other. He told me that he had accepted the position as Chief Executive Officer, CEO, of Computer Configurations Holdings, CCH. I was delighted for him. He asked me if I would leave SPL and join him at CCH. At first, I wasn't sure, but we'd worked well together, so it was worth considering. I thought about it for a second time and told him to make me an offer that I couldn't understand, and I would join him. The ball was now in his court. As is the norm in these cases, after resigning, Mike left SPL immediately and took a few weeks' leave, as he was only due to take up his position on the 1st of April 1998. Some months prior to this event, Sig, the financial director of SPL, had left the group to take up the position of CEO of another listed IT company called Unihold. Sig and Mike were also good friends, and they had made a pact not to poach staff from each other. The minute Sig heard that Mike had resigned, he called me, as the pact no longer applied. I applied to meet with him and the chairman of Unihold, and after a few rounds of discussions, they made me a formal offer. It was an attractive offer, but I wanted to wait to see what offer CCH were prepared to put on the table. During this period, Neil, the CEO of SPL, approached me. He knew that Mike and I had a great relationship and wanted to know what my thoughts and plans were. I was totally honest and told him that I was considering a few different options and that it was likely I would accept one of them. My reasons for considering alternative offers rather than stay at SPL were driven primarily by financial gain. I needed to maximize my earnings and wealth creation potential because I had recently agreed to leave the corporate world by the year 2000 in order to preserve my marriage. I enjoyed the culture at SPL, but in truth, it was no longer the culture of old, as Die Data had stamped their ethos on the company. But still, it was a great company to be working for. Lessons learned? 58. In any work situation, you should be clear to communicate your intentions, as it is unfair to the other party if they have to work on assumptions. 59. If you are ever in a position which allows you to evaluate several options, do so. However, do not play one against the other in an unfair or unreasonable manner. In April 1998, once Mike had settled in, he invited me to a meeting with Mario, the maverick chairman of CCH. I enjoyed the meeting with him and found him to be an extremely passionate and driven person. It was as if he had to prove to the world just how capable he was. He ruled his empire with an iron fist, and the staff were petrified of him. Most of the senior executives who worked for him were nothing more than yes-men, who seldom challenged him. I explained that I would only commit to a 2-year contract due to my personal plans, and they accepted. I left the meeting in a positive frame of mind, and Mike promised to give me a written offer in the next couple of days. I received the offer, and although it was reasonably generous, I felt that I was worth more. I had a subsequent meeting with Mike to talk about it, and he in turn discussed it with Mario. They then submitted an offer to me that I felt was acceptable, but before committing, I requested a one-on-one with Mario. When I met him, I told him that I was keen to join his group. However, I was a little concerned as to how I would fit in, as I was not prepared to be a yes man. I explained that I had always voiced my opinion and debated issues I did not agree with, but I had no problem in changing my mind if a better point of view was expressed. He laughed and said he would expect nothing less from me. I was comfortable, as I felt it then, and now know for sure that he always honors his word. I agreed to join and started my tenure at CCH on my 37th birthday, the 1st of June, 1998. When I joined CCH, they had about 120 employees who were predominantly focused on the hardware that they sold. CCH had recently listed on the stock exchange and had big plans, but generally the staff were inexperienced in dealing at senior corporate level. My initial role was to introduce a professional approach to large tenders or deal opportunities that they were targeting. Part of the differentiation was to be able to offer complementary services from the other CCH business units. To do this, we had to have group sales focus, which meant a sales effort from a company level rather than a business unit level. I set about planning this, but unbeknown to me at the time, this caused a huge political problem, as Anne, who was the sales director, felt that this was her responsibility, so it became a turf war. Although she was a good salesperson, I was more experienced and capable than her. But as soon as Mike mentioned her concerns, I offered to back off and do something else, as I had no career objectives at CCH, with me being on a short-term contract. So my first job at CCH lasted exactly 1 month. I was then appointed as a director of their fledgling professional services business unit. There were only about 10 people in this company, and in reality, all they offered were peripheral services around the hardware that was being sold by CCH. They were extremely inexperienced and lacked professionalism, but their intentions were good. By now, Sean, another friend and colleague from SPL, had joined CCH. He also joined the services business unit, and together we set about our task of transforming the business unit into something meaningful. I introduced new standards for all forms of documentation, correspondence, proposals, presentations, service level agreements, etc. We began to engage in our sales opportunities in a more professional way, which resulted in us winning a lot more business than had previously been the case. In June 1998, CCH made their biggest acquisition of a company at that time. They acquired Software Futures Group, SFG, an exciting software company led by a dynamic lady by the name of Aleta. In July 1998, Andrew, one of the directors of SFG, had called on Norwich Life, which was a customer of theirs. He had found out that as a result of FedSure, another larger insurance group acquiring Norwich, there was an outsourcing opportunity at Norwich Life. Andrew had approached Mike to tell him about it, and Mike immediately called me in to a meeting. Mike and I had been involved in outsourcing deals at SPL, so he felt that my experience would add value to this opportunity. As it turned out, I was scheduled to attend a conference in Cape Town the following week, so it was appropriate for me to meet with Andrew and Leon, who was the IT general manager at Norwich. As Anne was also attending the conference, she decided she would join us. When we met with Leon, it became clear that we were entering into the fray at a very late stage, as several other large IT companies had already submitted their proposals and had made their presentations. Leon even went so far as to say that they had already narrowed it down to a short list of two companies, but if we felt we had something great to put forward, they would allow us that opportunity. Leon felt that a decision had to be made soon, as his staff members were anxious about the takeover by Fedger, and some of them had already resigned to pursue other career opportunities. Such quick timing did not suit me, as I was due to go on an overseas golfing trip to Malaysia the following day. This had been arranged 9 months earlier. I had paid for everything, we had our visas, and we were ready to go. After the meeting, we stood in the car park outside Norwich offices and chatted about the opportunity. In my gut, I knew that we could win the deal if we could differentiate ourselves from the opposition. I knew exactly how we could do it, but nobody else in the CCH group at that time had the experience to pull it off, and I was due to fly out the following morning. I had to make an immediate decision. I would tell Anne and Andrew that I was cancelling my trip in order to manage the bid. I immediately called Annie and caught her in the bank just as she had collected our foreign currency. I told her that we weren't going. Understandably, she was not pleased, but she accepted it. I then called my golfing friends to explain my predicament, and, needless to say, they were also unhappy, but they understood. We returned to Johannesburg that evening, and we agreed to meet the next day to plan our approach. Lessons learned? 60. Your personal life must always come first, work always second. However, there are times when you have to make personal sacrifices for your work. Trust your gut to lead you to make the correct decisions when faced with these choices. At this time, CCH had a limited staff component in Cape Town. There were no professional services staff, such as support personnel, software developers, project managers, etc. As it was our stated intention that we wanted to grow our services company in this area, I believed that this was an ideal opportunity for us to do this in one swift move. In those times, the conventional outsourcing modus operandi was that the new owners of a business would interview all the staff of the company or business unit that they had acquired and selectively offer employment to those deemed appropriate. The staff not selected were given retrenchment packages. My idea was to guarantee all Norwich's staff a position, as this would differentiate our offering from our competitors, who were all larger, more established companies than CCH. This approach contained risks in that out of the 120-odd IT staff members that Norwich had, there was bound to be some dead wood among them. I suggested that in time the dead wood would be removed by peer pressure, as we had seen this happen many times before. The environment would be different, as it would no longer be a corporate IT shop that was a cost centre for Norwich, but it would now become a business unit that had to deliver profits. Bonuses would be affected by any staff who did not pull their weight, which would be the driver to transform their attitude or capabilities, or to push them out. The board of directors agreed with my approach, so I went ahead and put our bid together. Besides the different approach, I sold other benefits, such as the fact that they would essentially remain together in a new company, not to mention the excitement of them being part of one of the fastest-growing IT companies listed on the JSE at that time. Share options were promised, and our share price was going through the roof. In a little more than 18 months from the time CCH listed at 2 Rand per share, it had grown to approximately 41 Rand per share. No other company could match that performance. Part of the deal was that we were guaranteed a contract to supply services back to Fedshire Norwich, as the existing systems and networks had to continue operating during the transition period. Over a period of time, the costs of them would be managed down, and we would relocate staff to other projects and customers. This was potentially a lucrative deal for us if we managed the resources effectively. The following week, Andrew and I went back to Cape Town to present our proposal to Leon. As I described our approach, I could see that Leon was impressed and that he liked it. He spent an hour discussing the merits of the offer, and before we left, he said he felt positive about it and would discuss it with his IT management team and get back to us. few days later, Leon called to ask me to come down to Cape Town to meet with his management team, as they were impressed with our approach and wanted to discuss it in detail with us. Andrew and I met with them, and they were extremely positive. They told us that, although they supported our bid, we would have to convince the executives of Norwich and Fedshire as well. A time slot was located to us to present to them, and for this I requested that Anne and Mike be there as well. Mike is a great presenter who comes across extremely well. I had him present the credentials of CCH, and I presented our approach to the opportunity. It went extremely well, and we felt we had achieved our objectives. There was, however, one small snag. Joe, the group IT manager of Fedshire, had a good relationship with one of the other large companies we were competing against. In fact, I'm certain to this day that he had unofficially told them that they were going to be awarded the contract. By now, we had developed great momentum, so we asked them to allow us to present to all 120 IT staff members. Once again, at this presentation, we blew them away, and it could not have gone any better. We had now convinced the staff, the IT management group, and most of the Norwich executive team. However, Joe from Fedshire was still wavering. He was based in Johannesburg, so we arranged to meet him, and eventually we managed to get his buy-in as well. We were awarded the deal. It was such an important deal for us to win at the time because we had successfully competed against all the big established IT companies. We were now on the map, and we were considered a serious player. After we had received the good news, which was provided in the form of a letter of intent, I went to meet with Leon, and he surprised me with his announcement that he had resigned and was leaving to join Sunlum. I had not expected this at all, and part of our planning was based on the assumption that he would be joining us. He said he was due to start there soon, but he would keep in touch with me, and maybe we could do some business together. At the time, I assumed it was small talk, the kind of things people say but don't really mean. But as things turned out, he was true to his word. Now the work really started for Sean and me, as we had to do a detailed due diligence report on the current status of the applications, networks, and activities that were being provided by the Norwich IT department. We had to know what we had to deliver, and to do this, we had to understand what the problems were, as well as the quality of service as perceived by the users of the services and systems. In addition, I had started developing the heads of agreement between CCH and Norwich Fedshire. Despite no formal legal background, I had always involved myself in contract negotiations and had written up many legal agreements during my career. For some reason, I was very good at it, and I was comfortable doing so without having to consult legal experts. A few weeks later, we officially signed the heads of agreement. It took a fair amount of time to document every system and service provided by the IT department. We had to do this to prevent any scope creep from the customer. We could not afford to continue to develop applications or service them if new requirements were not charged for on normal commercial terms. We finally got on top of it, and these findings were to form part of the final agreement and the various service level agreements. Our next major task was to start the staff transition process. This meant we had to personally interview 120 people and deal with each and every one of their questions, concerns, or issues. We also had to be upbeat about CCH and how wonderful it was going to be for them. Mike and I decided to call on an older colleague from our SPL days who was considered to be a doyen in the services world. Mike H. had retired by then but was willing to assist us on the project. Sean, Mike H. and I divided the staff into three groups of 40 people and we started one Monday morning at 8 o'clock with our one-on-one interviews. Each interview was scheduled to be an hour long, but most went on a little bit longer. We each saw 8 people a day that whole week. I cannot begin to explain how tiring and draining this process was. You had to deal with lots of the same questions, lots of the so-called promises that had not been delivered to them, lots of personal and petty issues, office politics, and the like. The whole time you had to be attentive, empathetic, and upbeat, constantly reassuring them about how good this opportunity was for them. By Friday evening, we were absolutely exhausted, but we managed to make the 7 o'clock flight back to Johannesburg. Our new staff members were generally happy and excited about their new careers with CCH. Most of the following weeks I spent in Cape Town helping establish our new business, sorting out people issues, and establishing relationships with our new customer. It was extremely tiring and hard work, but I enjoyed it nonetheless. 2 months later, true to his word, I received a call from Leon at Sanlam, asking me to come down and see him, as he had some ideas he wanted to discuss. He had taken on a senior job with more than 300 IT staff reporting to him. Sanlam were in the process of trying to migrate from their legacy systems, many of them developed in older technologies. He had to balance the need to maintain and support these systems while releasing staff to be retrained in newer technologies. At the same time, he was under huge pressure to reduce costs in his division. Together, we conceived a model that would help him accommodate all these issues. In simple terms, we would take over about 100 of his staff, and we would contract them back to Sanlam for guaranteed periods each year. This would reduce Sanlam's costs, as they would not have to be employed on a permanent basis. We would also reskill them and contract them back to Sanlam to work on the new systems being developed in newer technologies. We would also utilize these staff members on other projects, as they all had vast experience in the insurance industry. Leon asked me to submit a formal proposal, but also said that he would have to extend this opportunity to other large IT companies, as Sanlam would not only consider one bid. So he invited the other companies that we had competed against for the Norwich deal to submit their proposals as well. No problem. No problem at all, I thought. We had outperformed them before, and now we had a bit of an inside track with Leon, as we had established a professional working relationship built on trust and honesty. The sales process started all over again, and we went through the same hoops, selling the idea to their executive, selling it to their IT management team, and selling it to the staff who were going to be affected. This process took much longer than expected, and it was only after 6 months that we finally managed to win the deal. The number of staff that we took on initially was about 60. This meant that we now had a services company with approximately 180 people in the Western Cape. That was serious critical mass, and we were now a major player. We appointed Jerry as the managing director, so it became his responsibility to deal with the staff transitioning issues. At about the same time, Anne had started to put together the group sales structure. I was asked to join the team to look after major bids and deals, and I had developed the group standards for presentations, proposals, and sales processes. I had helped run sales training courses, and I had helped develop a sales methodology to manage complex sales. I was essentially the glue that pulled and held these activities together. I was called into all sorts of activities, and I thrived on it. I was a mentor for many different people, and I loved sharing my knowledge, my experience, and my intellect. Sharing these aspects is far more powerful and rewarding than retaining them. I was no longer seen as a threat, as I had continuously made it clear that I was only there until the 31st of May 2000. At board level, however, the politics were rife, and it soon became clear to me that Mike was being undermined and attacked by other directors who had their own agendas. Mike was on leave around September 1999 when some of the others decided to persuade Mario to get rid of him. When Mike got back and I met with him and told him what I had learned, Mike met with Mario, and after some discussions over a period of time, Mike decided to leave. I did not agree with the decision, but if I were in Mike's place, I would have done the same. The directors who got their way were not up to standard as far as I was concerned, but they had worked with Mario for many years and knew how to manipulate his thinking. Aletta, who was not part of the Palace Revolution, was then appointed as the group managing director. I had worked extremely well with her, and we had a lot of mutual respect. Knowing that Mike was a close personal friend of mine, she asked me whether she could count on my support. I was happy to offer it. A major restructuring of the group then took place, which resulted in yet another change of job for me. Several companies were consolidated into what was called the Hosted Services Group. They included a business recovery company, an outsourced call center, the traditional services company, an outsourced data center, and a consulting company. I was asked to take up the position of sales director for this group from November 1999. Shortly after Mike had left, I made a decision to sell all my remaining shares in CCH. This decision was a difficult one because of the timing. I felt that there was a risk in the market as it had settled down significantly, and with it, CCH's share price had eased down to a more realistic value. My gut feel was that it was going to get worse. Added to this, my belief that the Palace Revolution was not the right thing at that time. I instructed Howard, our human resources director, to sell all my shares. He was a fantastic colleague, and we got on well. He knew me to speak my mind, and I did, whenever it was required. In discussing the repercussions of my decision, I made it quite clear that I did not care one iota how any of the directors perceived the disposal of my shares. They were my shares that I had earned and paid for, so I was free to do with them whatever I chose. I sold them all. It turned out to be the best decision for me, as the CCH share price began to collapse not long after that. Lessons learned. 61. Greed is a dangerous disease, which you need to manage. With shares, when you purchase or acquire them, you need to set the price at which you are prepared to sell them. When this price is reached, then sell them immediately, irrespective of what the share price is or what the market is doing. If you hang on too long, the share price can collapse far quicker than it can rise. I did not enjoy the last 7 months of my time at CCH for a number of reasons, some business and others personal. On the business front, the whole culture had changed. Paranoia reigned supreme. There was no longer the feeling of collective effort. I did not agree with some of the decisions regarding the strategy. Mario was no longer himself, as he had some medical problems and was also being investigated for insider trading. The sentiment of the market to CCH had turned from extremely positive to somewhere closer to neutral. Too many acquisitions had been made, and some of them were not good decisions. The group had essentially grown too big, too quickly. And yes, politics were rife. When I finally completed my contract at the end of May 2000, I was relieved. It had been a phenomenal 2 years during which I had learned much and shared more. It was time to move on to other opportunities, but first I had to fulfill a request for a favour. Frederick was at one stage the managing director of the business recovery company within the group. He was shifted sideways, a politically inspired move, when the company was consolidated into the Hosted Services Group. He was essentially made a salesman and had to report to me. Frederick had joined CCH before they listed on the stock exchange, so he had been with the group from the early days. He has the most fantastic sense of humour and is a joke teller of note. I often said to him that he should have been a stand-up comic. We had become good friends over the 2 years I was there. I'm not one for farewell parties, and so I had never had one when I left SPL and insisted on not having one when I left CCH. Frederick was in the process of employing a salesperson when I left. He had interviewed a few, but called me a couple of days after I had left. He asked me to do him a personal favour by interviewing this one female candidate that he was not sure of. I said to him that he was more than capable of doing this himself, as he had done so often before. But he insisted, and I relented. On the day of the interview, I went to the offices a little earlier than the scheduled time so I could read her CV and any other notes that he could give me. He wasn't there and had switched off his mobile telephone. At 12 o'clock, the scheduled time of the interview, he came rushing in and apologized for being late and said that the candidate had arrived and was in the downstairs reception. I asked him for her CV as he ushered me into the boardroom, which was located in the center of the offices and had clear glass all round. Normally, the blinds were drawn to give some privacy, but on this day, the blinds on one side were up. He motioned for me to sit on one side of the table, which at the time seemed strange, as I had run many a meeting there, and I usually sat, well, wherever I wanted to. I sat with my back facing the drawn-up blinds. He left me, and then returned with this young, attractive lady and introduced me. She sat down opposite me, and Frederick left on the pretext of getting her CV for me. I hate chit-chat as a rule. Making conversation is not something that I enjoy doing, but I had to start somewhere. I asked her what Frederick had told her about the position. I was astonished by her response, which was basically to tell me that she couldn't remember all the details, so would I please tell her again? I could not believe what I was hearing and immediately wondered how he could even consider her, let alone ask her to return for a second interview. I wanted to end the interview there and then, but new labour laws had been introduced and you had to be careful that you did not do anything silly, like tell her to get lost after only 2 minutes into the interview. I bit my tongue and patiently began to describe the company and the role. While I was speaking, she interrupted me and said she was extremely hot and asked if I would mind if she took her jacket off. I said the central air conditioning seemed to be working perfectly, but if she felt the need to do so, she could remove her jacket. She did so, only to show a huge amount of cleavage. I continued without missing a beat, or a peek for that matter. My eye contact was even more pronounced, as I was not going to get caught by any silly attempt that she appeared to be making. As I was speaking, she started unbuttoning her top to reveal an ample bosom, which was not being supported by anything other than the silicone that had clearly been successfully inserted by an extremely talented surgeon. I told her at that point to stop. But she said she was extremely hot. I said that was tough luck and she should just have to withstand the normal temperature. The next thing, she stood up and in a flash, her skirt was off with her top, leaving her in a G-string and high heels. And if that wasn't scary enough, she started to move around the boardroom table towards me. Me! I was up and off in a shot around the other side of the table to get away from this lunatic. As I got to the other side, I could see 20 of my colleagues standing behind the clear glass, howling with laughter. They had made a complete fool of me. They had been watching the show, totally unbeknown to me. I've got to state that the relief I felt was far greater than my embarrassment. They had organized some drinks and snacks, so in the end, courtesy of Frederick, I had a small farewell party.